This is the TTY Dialer, episode 22 for the week of March 27th through April 1st. Hi, this is Mark Livonier with another weekly companion to WRVO's old-time radio show Tuned to Yesterday. 7 nights a week, we bring you golden age of radio comedy, drama, action, westerns, sci-fi, romance, and much more from 10 to midnight on the air and online as well at WRVO.org. This podcast brings you fun with sound from radio's yesteryear, radio history, and a look at the shows coming up for the week on Tuned to Yesterday. Now, I think this podcast is really best listened to on Sundays or Mondays because it gets you ready for the week of old-time radio. Sundays can be a good time to kick back or get things done around the house with a podcast, but that decision really is up to you.
You are the jury.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor.
Defendant, rise and face the jury. How do you find this defendant, guilty or not guilty?
We find the defendant, Pete Slocum.
This is the thrilling new transcribed program called You Are the Jury, devised by the famous criminologist Roy Post. Here is your chance to actually take part in a jury trial without leaving your own living room. The chance to find out what kind of juror you would make. But first, let's hear a few words from that friend of yours, the jeweler.
I guess that's supposed to be me. Actually, it was more likely a local announcer who would read the commercial for the Gruen Watch Company, which sponsored part of the show called You Are the Jury. It was syndicated to stations in the late 1940s and early 50s by the same company that produced the show called Famous Jury Trials on TV. On radio, these 15-minute programs were played in orchestration with the local radio talent that would read the commercial during the music you hear in the background right now, and presumably also read the verdict of the previous show. That was the hook of the program. Listeners had to tune in next time to hear how the trial played out. And we could only guess that a local announcer read the verdict live on the air, because in the 8 or so recordings that have survived from this program, none of them contain the previous verdict that listeners expected to hear. But because the trials were actually made up in the first place, you could listen to any You Are the Jury episode and make up your own conclusion. Like, let's say, the defendant was sort of guilty.
That was an unexpected conclusion.
Okay, fair enough.
Why did the defense rest its case after calling only two witnesses? Is Pete Slocum guilty or not guilty of the premeditated murder of Adam Wiley? You will hear the verdict on the next program of You Are the Jury.
By the way, if the show's announcer sounds familiar, that's Dan Seymour, the same voice that helped make the most famous radio show of all time make its history as he read the fictitious news reports, among other things, on the Mercury Theater broadcast of the War of the Worlds.
Professor Farrell of the Mount Jennings Observatory, Chicago, Illinois, reports observing several explosions of incandescent gas occurring at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The spectroscope indicates the gas to be hydrogen and moving toward the Earth with enormous velocity. Professor Pearson of the observatory at Princeton confirms Farrell's observation and describes the phenomenon as, quote, like a jet of blue flame shot from a gun, unquote. We now return you to the music of Ramon Rockello, playing for you in the Meridian Room of the Park Plaza Hotel, situated in downtown New York.
Just the beginning of where the real fun started on that War of the Worlds broadcast. We have some great shows coming up this Monday night at 10 o'clock on Tuned to Yesterday. It's Mystery for an Hour, from episodes of Suspense and Sherlock Holmes.
Who was that woman, Holmes?
Surely you know that face, Watson.
Not the Duchess.
I've never mentioned names, Watson. Now's our chance if we're quick.
What are you doing, man?
Safe, Watson. The papers in the safe. To save our own client and who knows how many more besides. Quick, put that bundle in your pocket, Watson.
Yes, sir.
And give the rest to me. Hurry. Yes. Someone must have heard the shots. Listen. There are people coming. Out of the window, quickly, Watson!
At 11 o'clock Monday night westerns, we'll hear Jimmy Stewart as the Six Shooter, then Gunsmoke from 1956. This Tuesday night at 10, comedy from the Eddie Cantor Show, and the play called There's Something in the Air on the First Nighter program. At 11 this Tuesday night, it's The Passing Parade, kicking off an hour of true history, followed by the Hallmark Playhouse with another true story from 1948. Hear these programs this Monday, March 27th, and Tuesday, March 28th, from 10 to midnight on Tuned to Yesterday on the air, or streaming live at our website, WRVO.org. this Friday, March 31st, is the birthday of one Henry Lerner von Ost Jr., better known to the world as comedian Henry Morgan. He's known to a lot of people for his time as a panelist on television's I've Got a Secret in the mid-1950s, but his real reach and forte was his irreverent and offbeat comedy on radio. In a lot of ways, he was a welcome voice to the listeners who wanted comedy but didn't want the high camp or predictable humor on the air quite a bit during its golden age. His style was very different, as he was heard pondering the day-to-day with thoughtful jokes, though a lot of it was pretty biting. He was known by many in the industry and the press as the bad boy of broadcasting, and he had not so humble beginnings at his career start in 1933. He was part of the air staff of four East Coast stations in about 7 years, and not necessarily because he wanted to move around so much. From time to time, he would insert his sharp wit while reading the news or the weather, which really upset the management and set the course for future clashes with those people that were paying him. He was given a break at New York station WOR in the late 1930s, where he was given his own 15-minute show where he could contemplate life and get a few laughs doing so. And being placed in the time slot immediately following that station's popular Superman series, he quickly got a big following. But with this on-air freedom came a price that Henry Morgan really had a hard time paying, and that was reading a commercial for, or how about not making a comment on his show's sponsor. Famously, he had stabs at the Adler Elevator Shoe Company, saying that he wouldn't wear them to a dogfight. Then, in a retraction by way of an apology, he said, "Okay, I would wear them to a dogfight." He butt heads with his sponsors throughout his career, and in one interview he explained that he just generally had a distaste for the corporate world. There are hundreds of examples of this, and pretty easy to find just by listening to most any show that still exists with him in it, but none were more publicized than his rivalry with one of his last radio sponsors when he was heard nationally on ABC in 1947.
Eversharp is a company which makes the Eversharp Schick Injector Razor, which sells for $1.25 with 20 blades and changes blades automatically. Eversharp sponsors this program. We will now have a 3-second silence in their honor. Last week, a man made a very interesting test. This man took a certain razor and shaved one side of his face. He took another company's razor and shaved the other side. The left side came out smooth, clean, and perfectly magnificent. The right side was rough, ragged, and completely obnoxious. Now, because of business ethics, I can't tell you which razors he used. We will now have a 3-second silence in honor of the losing razor. We will now have a short cheer for the winning razor. Hooray. Too bad I can't mention either razor. I'm supposed to talk about Eversharp for a minute. I haven't quite filled a minute yet. We will now have a 3-second silence in honor of the minute I'm supposed to fill. There we are. Okay.
Believe it or not, Eversharp dropped their sponsorship after just one season. And when it comes down to it, Henry Morgan's talent or goal wasn't just lacerating his sponsors on the air. The Hollywood Reporter publication observed this in an article in 1947 that said, quote, "He is not merely in making jokes out of what he sees. He's more interested in ideas than in situations or gags. He is an observer, and his humor is a humor of comment," end quote. The article went on to say that Morgan looked at the world with a rebel's eyes, the eyes of one who has found the status quo an uncomfortable sight. Let's hear some sound now from one of his early shows on WOR from 1942.
I want to do that whole thing all over again. Good evening, anybody. Here's Morgan. See, that's when I wish I was supposed to come in. Well, must be Springs got him. I was talking to a robin this afternoon, just back from Miami Beach, Florida. He said it was awful. He had to occupy a nest with 10 other birds at $50 a day. Never had a wink of sleep either because one of his roommates was a woodpecker, kept dreaming about Charlie McCarthy. Another was an eagle who was afraid of getting bald. Ooh. Ooh. Then all day he had to listen to the complaints of a chicken hawk who developed an allergy to chicken. It's pretty silly, isn't it? It gets worse, though. So all in all, the robin had come finally to dislike the sooth. Said he wasn't going to vote for Senator Claghorn anymore. Said he came back north with the help of a prevailing southerly, or Claghorn wind. Wind, that is. Claims that now his favorite radio program is Mr. and Mrs. North. Favorite football team is Northwestern. This Robin told me the next winter he's going to fly west, following the tracks of the Northern Pacific. Going to spend the winter in North Dakota eating apples. Northern spies.
Hey.
Brr. I asked this Robin, you tired of the Robin yet? Kill him off in a minute. I asked him about the old verse, and he gave me the answer. The old verse, you may remember, is, when the north wind doth blow, then we will have snow. And what will the robin do then, poor thing? I have the answer. He'll save all his dough, hide his roll in the snow, and sleep till he's paged in the spring. And now, it's spring in New York. The women are discarding the funny hats they wore all winter and putting on the hysterical things they wear in the spring. The air is a lot clearer, so you can see the grime on the buildings. At high noon, a little sunlight trickles down between the office buildings. The stenographer looks out the window and wishes that she was in a novel by Faith Baldwin or Kathleen Norris, and that strong, handsome Eric would pick her up in his muscular arms and carry her across the pond. Her boss looks out the window and wishes that his name was Eric. They both sigh, look at each other, shrug their shoulders, and go back to finishing their income tax statements. Ah, spring.
One of Morgan's earlier shows before going national, now after he got basically booted off of the ABC show in the mid-40s, after some television work, he did turn back to his own radio show in the late 1950s on station WBAI in New York.
Good evening, anybody. Here's Morgan, the only professional conversationalist on the air who has to talk to himself. We got no budget. I can't afford a guy even to say, is that so? No kidding. It's a shame, that's what.
This Wednesday night, March 29th at 10 o'clock on Tune to Yesterday Science Fiction for an hour from episodes of Suspense and 2000 Plus from the 1950s, then Crime at 11 with broadcasts of The Whistler and The Lineup. This Thursday, March 30th at 10, drama from the CBS Radio Workshop, then a wartime broadcast of Everything for the Boys, followed by horror on Inner Sanctum Mysteries, then a broadcast of The Mysterious Traveler.
I've got $200,000 and my whole life ahead of me. Should let an old coot like that boomer worry me. Joe's getting killed by a train was just an accident. Could happen to anybody. Me? I'm alive. Tomorrow, I'm gonna start enjoying it plenty.
Hear these programs Wednesday, March 29th and Thursday, March 30th from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday on the Air or streaming live at our website, wrvo.org. And speaking of the mysterious traveler, one of radio's ominous-sounding hosts, Maurice Tarplin, was born this Saturday, April 1st in 1915 and was best known to listeners as the narrator of that series, an anthology show of thrills, horror, and suspenseful tales. Before he found a home with the show, Tarplin was among the hundreds of actors who worked New York's Radio Row, auditioning for spots on many different shows like the Columbia Workshop, Words at War, and Murder Clinic. From December of 1943 through September of 1952, he had landed work with the Mysterious Traveler, and his voice usually followed the sound. The sound of a train whistle was meant to invite you into the Mysterious Traveler's boxcar, where he would tell you a story of the week.
This is the Mysterious Traveler inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, and it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as I bring you the strange and chilling story.
And because there were different stories featured on the show every week, Tarplin's narrator role made him really the only recurring character. that brought listeners through adventure and suspense with often desperate-sounding characters, at times believable and other times melodramatic. And it's actually cited as the first radio program to dramatize a hijacked plane scenario in sound. The famed writing team of Morton Fine and David Friedkin, as well as the accomplished writer-director Robert A. Arthur, made the series quite a success on the Mutual network as a sustained show or one without any sponsor. And Mutual was able to do this because since its inception, it was intended to be a low-cost show to produce, often using lesser-known actors who weren't too choosy about what roles they took on. The show fell short, however, in terms of the Hoover ratings. That was a service at the time equivalent to TV's Nielsen ratings of today. So what the Hoover raters would do is simply call people at home and ask them what they were listening to on the radio at that time. And because The Mysterious Traveler had so many time slot changes, the show was actually kind of hard to catch in certain months and often missed out on that radio census. But if the numbers of more consistently scheduled shows, like let's say The Whistler, are any indication, The Mysterious Traveler had a listenership in the millions. Here's some sound from one of the most famous episodes from the series called Behind the Locked Door.
The strongest of them stumble along in the darkness and find the underground river. They catch an abundance of fish and are able to survive.
The huge fishbone piles along the river.
Right. The river was an everlasting supply of food. They continue to live by the river in the dark. Some probably went insane, died. Others adjusted themselves to their new environment.
Professor, you think those handful of survivors had descendants who are alive today inside this mountain?
Yes, Martin. And it was one of them who clawed sand to death.
What can those descendants be like, being born and living in darkness?
I can only guess. I should imagine they'd be blind or near to it. But their other senses would be remarkably developed.
Their physical appearance.
I don't know.
It's all like a nightmare. A nightmare you can't awaken from. What's to prevent them from attacking us?
And our flashlights, for one thing. I'm sure light frightens them, just as fire frightens animals. Fortunately, I have a revolver.
Well, we better move on. Wait a minute, what about Sam?
There's nothing we can do for him now. Come along, Martin. We must find the trail I marked so that we can get out of here.
Seems we've been searching days for the markings you left.
Yes. Actually, it's been 10 hours. Listen.
What? The river.
Yes.
Yeah.
Come along. Yeah. Once we reach the river, we'll be able to pick up the trail I marked.
Well, we're getting closer.
Yes.
There it is.
Here we are. Look, Martin, there's my marking on that passageway. We found the trail.
Yes.
Martin, it's 2 a.m. We'd better rest for a few hours. We're both too exhausted to go on right now. It's one of us stand guard, while the other sleeps.
All right. I'll set up the first hour.
Thank you, Martin. Keep your flashlight on.
Don't worry. I will. In a matter of minutes, the professor fell asleep, and I sat on guard, flashing my light slowly around the huge cavern. I looked at my watch, and the seconds seemed like minutes, and the minutes like hours. My eyes grew heavy, and I finally dozed off. Suddenly, I awakened in the darkness to hear the professor screaming.
Turn on the flashlight!
Frantically, I stumbled in the darkness, but I couldn't find it. And suddenly, there were shots. By the flashes of the gun, I could see the professor struggling with a huge, dark figure. And suddenly, all was quiet. Except for the professor's moans. As I crawled toward him, in the darkness, my hand struck the flashlight. I turned it on, and there was the professor.
Martin, I think
I'm wounded. You're bleeding badly. Let me stanch your wounds.
Too late. Leave at once. At once.
But what about you? Professor? Professor! I felt his heart, but there was no beat.
Some sound from the mysterious traveler's story behind the locked door. By the way, if you've been listening to the podcast regularly this month, it's Try Podcasting Month across the public radio system, where we're asking you to just take about 10 minutes or so and get a family member or a friend, take them by the hand, and show them how to listen to podcasts and download them and put them on their favorite MP3 device. It's really easy to do, and if we all are listening to podcasts, then the quality of them gets better and the choices are a little bit broader. Another podcast that I've been enjoying in the past few years is This American Life. It's heard on our station on Saturday afternoons, but I can't always catch it at that time, so I just head straight to WBEZ's website to download it. It's hosted by Ira Glass and tells contemporary stories of today, often with an interesting investigative reporting twist. At any rate, show a friend or family member how to download podcasts and to listen to them this week. And if you do, post about it on social media, link WRVO with the hashtag tripod. That's hashtag TRYPOD. And coming up this Friday night, March 31st at 10, it's sitcoms for an hour. We'll have The Bickersons, a popular show here on Toonta yesterday, then My Little Margie from 1955. Then an adaptation of the movie The Big Lift on the Screen Director's Playhouse at 11 in an hour of adventure.
You see, Mr. O'Malley, it's all a matter of pulling the right switch at the right time.
Uh-huh. How about this one, Sergeant?
Hey, you pull that and the wings fall off.
Never mind him. He's just a pilot. The captain's jealous because he ain't getting his name in the paper.
I'm jealous of that 24-hour pass you've got.
Tell me, doesn't this fog bother you guys?
Nope. As long as you can see the wingtips, it's a clear day.
Glad to hear it. Where are we?
Coming into Tempelhof.
Well, how do you know?
Radio. GCA will be picking us up any minute now.
GCA?
Ground-controlled approach, radar and stuff. Maybe we don't know where we are, but they know on the ground. They just talk us down.
GCA, coming in now, Sarge. Sounds like your friend, Hank Kowalski.
Then on April 1st at 10 o'clock, it's an hour of romance from the mayor of the town, once again with Lionel Barrymore and the series Romance. Then comedy from the Joe Penner program from 1939, a classic comedian, and the Judy Canova show from 1943. You can hear these programs this Friday and Saturday, March 31st and April 1st from 10 to midnight on the air on Toonta yesterday. Or if you're out of our signal area, listen to it live at our website, wrvo.org. And by the way, I'd like to bring something up before I close out this podcast, and that is repeats of Toonta yesterday. Now, I get emails from time to time that say, hey, Mark, I've been hearing the same shows, and it's a repeat broadcast. When will there be new ones? And, you know, my knee-jerk sort of smarmy response would be, well, they're all repeats. You know, they were first on the air 50, 60 years ago. But I do know what you mean. In terms of the modules that I produce that are by genre, an hour long, I don't need to explain it because you do listen. What I do is mix and match them so I can get other station business done, because I have about 1,700 shows or 1,700 hours pre-recorded at this point. But I did want to let you know that if for any reason you are feeling those repeat blues, that the month of April we'll be hearing about 20 new modules to Toonta yesterday. I'm working hard to bring new shows to our airwaves not heard in years. So I hope you're looking forward to that and all of the other old-time radio we have on this week. Now, if you have any questions about radio's past, this podcast, or Toonta yesterday, just email me, mark at wrvo.org. That's Mark with a K at wrvo.org. Okay, until next week, where we'll have more radio history and fun from radio's past. Thanks a lot for listening. See you then.